week on Timey-Wimey TV, Inspector Spacetime himself, Travis Ritchie, reveals how a one-line scene on Community became a web series and a fan movement. Hey there, Internet! Did you miss us?
Long time no see, Internet!
I bet you missed us.
Terribly.
Terribly.
I know I, on a personal level, missed you guys.
I missed you a lot. It's Liz Shannon Miller at Lizlet on the Twitters.
And I'm Rudy Deshan at Rudy on Twitter. And you're listening to Timey-Wimey TV, our little podcast of time travel-related adventures, particularly about travelers in space and time.
Yes.
Usually about a certain doctor.
A doctor... Doctor Who, might I ask?
Oh, it's actually the Doctor, as you scolded me a number of times on this podcast.
Yes.
Right back at you.
Oh, man. I got served.
And but today we're actually talking about another traveler.
Yes. We will be doing our own little bit of time traveling to speak with Travis Ritchie, aka the Inspector, who travels through space and also through time, sometimes officially for the show Community and sometimes not officially for the show an Untitled web series about a space traveler who also travels through time.
That's true. But it's been a while since you guys heard us on your headphones. Been busy. I know I have been. I think October's been the actual busiest month in my life, given everything that was going around in my life at that time, getting married.
Hence our semi hiatus, for which I hope you can loyal listeners can forgive us, and new listeners do not have to care about it in the slightest because you're here now. Hooray!
Yeah, that's all that matters, that you're here.
So let's start things off. I have basically a roundup of all, like, over the month of October, I selected carefully all the time travel movie and television show related news that could possibly fit into one podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to run it down really quickly for y'all. First off, Tom Cruise is going crazy time travel wise. He is not only, I think, filming the film All You Need Is Kill, where a man fighting aliens in the future has to relive the same day where he keeps getting killed.
Right.
It's basically like, it sounds like basically like when you're playing a video game and you get stuck on that one level, so you just have to constantly play it over and over again.
I'm actually reading the book right now.
Oh, really? It's based on a book.
It's based on a book. It's actually was a Japanese novel. Okay. And it's been translated. A friend of mine, Jessica Matsumoto, a talented actress, she actually handed over to my wife and said, "Your husband might like this, you know, being into time travel and stuff." So,
how is it?
I literally just started, and it's got a kind of like all quiet on the Western Front feel, where immediately within a few pages, you're like, "Wow, life at war is depressing," but sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Until Tom Cruise is involved, but
I feel like, just based on the Mission Impossible movies, Tom Cruise has...
I actually think Tom Cruise gets a bad rap because of, like, some of the accused insanity that happens around him. But, when he's on point. I mean, Night and Day is a really lame movie, except for the chemistry of Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz.
He is a movie star.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really make him like that anymore, except for Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
He's just a movie star, and that's it. Whatever else you might say about him, like, that's a skill set that very few people have. Mm-hmm. The other movie that Tom Cruise is making, because Tom Cruise is seriously making two time travel movies, apparently, is a film called Our Name is Adam. Which is being produced by Paramount and Skydance, and it is, Tom Cruise plays an astronaut who travels back in time and works with his younger self.
Okay, I wonder if they're going for, was he going to play himself?
Or that's the big question. I feel like either way, it'll be a really interesting answer.
Right.
Because, I mean, who do you find, who's the young actor you find to play young Tom Cruise? Or who's the actor you find to play old Tom Cruise? Like,
right.
I don't know which way that'll go. Or maybe they'll just use makeup. They'll use the magic of cinema.
It's also going to be Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be really funny if it was just Joseph Gordon-Levitt again.
He's Hollywood's go-to guy to play younger versions of Hollywood.
Another thing I've got for you, Rudy, is in Opposite Worlds, this is a unscripted show that Sci-Fi is producing, and in the show Opposite Worlds, 20 people from all walks of life are mixed together in opposing teams that live in two distinctly different worlds, the past and the future. The future is a utopia where every wish can be granted with the press of a button. The past is a constant struggle for survival. I have no idea how that's a real reality show, but they've already made it.
Produced it.
Well, this is an adaptation, actually. Like, it was originally a Chilean reality show,
right?
And because Chilean reality television is so,
it's interesting because I heard about this show and I thought it was, you know, not past and future, but like utopia versus post-apocalyptic,
which is another way it could go. But right. I guess essentially. With the past and the post-apocalypse, you know, have a lot of similarities, except you everyone has to wear ripped clothing in the post-apocalypse. But yeah, I mean, that's
so that or jumpsuits. No, wait, that's the future.
That's the future. Everyone has to wear jumpsuits in the future.
Torn clothing in the other one.
They're torn jumpsuits, but they're jumpsuits. And this is, I think, my favorite one. With my favorite bit of my favorite upcoming time travel project for 2014. Turkeys features two birds from opposite sides of the tracks who join forces and travel through time to get their species off people's plates. It's a CGI animated film. Woody Harrelson and Owen Wilson will provide the voice of the two lead turkeys. This is a serious movie being made by a major motion picture studio.
It's from the creators of Ants.
It's Relativity. Yes, it's... But yeah, there's your time travel, you know, because really, time travel, turkeys, those two things I immediately combine in my head whenever I think about one of them.
That's hilarious. Actually, funny enough, I was listening to an NPR article about turkeys and wild turkeys versus domesticated. And there's a kind of weird loop with the whole thing. Turkeys, as we know them, came from North America, but they were brought over in the 1500s to Europe, and that's where they actually had the first Thanksgivings and all that stuff were held.
Sure.
That's where they bred. And so when the pilgrims, like came back,
that's crazy.
They brought their own turkeys over. So there's actually, like, real North American turkeys, and the turkeys we eat, like the butterball turkeys, are actually, you know, like other...
Descendants of these European turkeys.
Yes.
That's crazy pants.
That is crazy pants.
So perhaps, like, the time travel, like, maybe that's where the turkeys will go. They'll go, like, to the the pilgrim times.
Yes, or before that.
Yeah. And now it's time to check in with Rudy with your forecast on the... We've been covering this for a while now, the Star Trek Doctor Who comic book crossover.
That's right.
Which I've been failing to catch up with, but you've been reading regularly.
Yes, and I've plugged it into our Nate Silver approved prediction model.
Sure.
And currently it's trending in a not positive direction.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Latest issues came out a couple of weeks back, and I think another one's coming out in the next week or so. And when we last off, we had mentioned that the story seemed to have suddenly take a kind of very... despite a really solid beginning and an excellent flashback to the 60s Star Trek and Tom Baker Doctor Who...
Sure.
We suddenly found ourselves kind of like a very... I guess pedestrian plot that continues at this point in terms of like, oh, the Cybermen turned on the Borg, which I always say it's not as good as that moment at the very first episode of Firefly when you have Wash playing with
the dinosaurs
and, you know, that your inevitable betrayal. And that's pretty much what they had in it.
But it happened really fast. Like, you expected, like, a lot more, like...
Yeah, you expect a lot more. And we already mentioned, like, it's not just expect a lot more. It was just, like, this... You're going for a very simplified plot. Like, they went from a plot that was really interesting and had a lot of mystery to suddenly, like, oh, well, here's the problem. And even last issue now was, like, a lot of head talking. As the crew came up with a plan, as they team up with the Borg for it. And the usual, like, what stops you, the Borg, from killing us when we succeed? And the Borg going, you have to trust us. And that's...
And everyone being like, that's a bad idea.
Everyone's, all Star Trek crew's like, that's a bad idea. And the Doctor going, Captain, you have to think of the future. The biggest problem right now is some of the tone is really weird, at least for the Doctor Who characters. Spoilers. Spoilers.
That's oh, that was a good...
That was my Picard.
That's a really good Picard. At least for the word spoilers.
Spoilers. But basically, you know, their solution is the same one they did with when the last time the Borg... Like, the first great Borg two-parter with Mercutus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With, what's it called? I can't remember this that one. Well, the one with Wolf 359.
The Best of Both Worlds?
No, Best of Both Worlds is the final episode.
No, the best, no, no, All Good Things is
All
the
All Good
last
Things, episode. You're right, yes. I have my
best apologies. Best of Both Worlds, parts one and two.
Part, like, how they solve the Borg in that one, so I'm going to try to minimize.
Yeah.
They basically are saying, oh, let's just pull that trick off again, but Doctor, could you be the one that go gets it? I'm like, okay, I guess it's, there was this promise of really... interesting takes on this stuff, and how, like, there was this thing of like, oh, our universes are colliding, and suddenly it's becoming more of like, no, but they actually always exist in the same universe, and this is how things are. Maybe they'll go back to it or to resolve it.
I will say I like the idea of characters being like, hey, remember how we had a good plan that one time? Let's just try that again.
Right.
Let's see how that works.
Well, the weird thing is that it's you're I guess you get, like, if someone had pointed that out, that would have been fine, like, we already did this before.
Right.
It's
oh, they don't. It's
they don't. It's more like the Borg are like, you need to do this. We have our command center with commands, which if you will get, you can then issue a command. And Data going, that sounds like a plan, Captain, and it's too dangerous. And then Matt Smith going, I guess I'll be the one to do it because we won't cross our paths.
I got really excited for you doing a Matt Smith impression. I have to say that was a bit of a letdown.
I'm sorry. I've been a student of Trek for a far longer time.
That's fair enough.
How can I imitate Smith? I don't even think Smith can imitate Smith.
That's true. I'm sure somebody can.
Somebody.
Our special guest this week can probably pull it off.
Oh, that's true. Our special guest this week can definitely pull it off. Thanks for the wonderful segue. I've missed
it. Yeah. Well, we're not segued quite yet. The one thing... So, unfortunately, the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover may not be panning out as great as we hoped. However, the art... I love some of the art. I think the renderings of the characters is like... It's like that perfect... It avoids the uncanny valley and is
right.
Really like... It avoids the uncanny valley, but it's still very recognizably the characters.
Right, and there's moments when he really captures the expressions of, you know, not only the Trek crew, but particularly of Doctor and the Pons.
Yeah, and the artist behind that, J.K. Woodward, had lost his home in Hurricane Sandy. And,
yes.
Which is very sad. And right now, if you're listening to this sometime within... the range of us posting it, he's raising money with an art sale on his website. So if you go to jkwoodwardart.blogspot.com, again, that's jkwoodwardart.blogspot.com. We'll have a link on our site as well if you want to purchase some of the very lovely art that he's created. He also worked on the series Fallen Angel.
Yep.
So there's some of that as well. And there's some other characters.
Oh, yeah. Steve's been doing some covers. There's some great Batman art that's out there.
So go buy some pretty art for your walls and then also, you know.
Do it for a good cause.
Yeah, help out a dude who needs some help. Another thing you can buy, by the way, this is cool. I think this is cool enough, I think, that I'm going to try to check it out. And, you know, we'll talk about it on a future podcast. But anyone who watched this last run of Doctor Who, because I don't want to call it a season because they didn't finish their season. But this last chunk of Doctor Who, including the farewell to the Pons in The Angels Take Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Angels Take Manhattan?
Yes.
Great.
Because we can start making Muppet jokes about that.
Yes, that's right. Of course we made Muppet jokes about that. But there is a novel written from the point of... I guess it's written... I'm not sure if it's written from River Song's point of view or if it's written as a straight-up detective novel.
Let's both read it.
Let's both read it. But
and then we can give some recommendations on it.
Yes. The Angel's Kiss, which is... It's a novella written by, I believe, one of the writers on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a Melody Malone mystery.
Yeah.
So it is I suppose a hard-boiled detective novel with some River Song touches and maybe some timey-wimey-ness, maybe some sci-fi-iness. Who knows? But that's for a future episode.
It's an official book. It's like actually my concern when I first saw it was like, oh, did someone get like jumped the gun, got clever about it,
and like put up their fanfic?
Right, but it's actually BBC Books. Here's the thing: they've been publishing a lot With, again, there's another thing of the Matt Smith era that mm-hmm. I've noticed in bookstores is that there are actual Doctor Who. There's always been Doctor Who books. I know that's my first introduction was through books. But in terms of North American bookstores, having those Doctor Who adventures in place. And actually, one of them was about, I just started popping my brain, about the moon launch, which is funny given what happened with this past season.
Oh, yeah.
With the silence.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, so by past season, you mean season 6.
Yes.
Because we're still in season 7.
Oh, you know, it's us traveling in our own time machines that get me so confused about when in our timelines we are.
Speaking of our timelines and how mix 'em upsies they are, you want to hop in our little roadster?
Our little roadster? Our little time roadster?
Our little time roadster. Travel back in time. Talk to a guy who knows a little bit about traveling through space and time.
A certain inspector you see?
Inspector.
The inspector.
The inspector.
Well, let's get into our roadster here.
Yep.
Closing the door. Cranking the widget wobble.
Whoosh!
Whoosh!
That's just the noise I make when we hop in our roadster. It's not okay. The actual sound effect.
Okay, well, we're activating the thing. You can hear this weird special effect, and here we go! Woo!
Hello there, Travis Ritchie. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. That was a tense bit of silence right there. I was just tingling with anticipation.
As well you should. So Travis comes to us from the wilds of West Hollywood, and you are you have a long backstory in writing, producing web video. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I've been doing it for a while.
And
define a while.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, let's see. In 2006, I joined YouTube in order to watch Vlogbrothers. I don't know if you guys know who they are. They inspired me to do to produce. And at the time, I'd already been producing a podcast, strangely enough, called Boy Cow Radio with a friend of mine from Acme Comedy Theater, where I do a sketch and improv. And so we produced 15 episodes of a podcast that was kind of just like a geek news, you know, we covered everything nerdy, movies, comic books, video games, whatever. But it was audio, you know, that was, and then the progression was the Vlogbrothers inspired me to do a YouTube kind of vlog series. So we had a group vlogging project called MuseCast, which was, we had 5 entertainers who vlogged every week documenting their career for a year. Mm-hmm. And we, at the end of the first year, we actually did well enough that we had, the fans wanted another year. So we recast with 5 new people. And one of those people turned out to be Eric Loya, who I knew already, but he submitted like an actual audition tape and, we cast him. And he was so good at doing his videos that I finally messaged him and said, you know, we're looking to do this web series called Robot Ninja and Gay Guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything else about it really yet, you know, because we hadn't developed it other than that it was a sitcom about 3 roommates. And how would you like to be the head writer? And he said, okay. And I think this was just like literally in a comment on one of his Facebook posts. And he wrote back and said, okay. And then I was moving at the time and he didn't hear from me. So a month later, he sends me 3 scripts for that show.
You were just like, you just told him write something about a robot ninja and a gay guy. And
yeah, I didn't. You're being redundant, by the way. You don't have to say gay guy. It's in the name. It's assumed. But no, yeah, he wrote me those scripts, and he actually said in his email, "I'm not at all attached to these scripts. I didn't even name the characters. If you don't like it, you know, I didn't want to get attached to them. I just wanted to write something. But I loved them so much that I told him we're going to go into production on this next month. And we didn't have anything to do, anything, any equipment, any money. I just knew that they were that good, so I wanted to start filming. And that's the month back in 2009 that I did this. For about a year and a half, I produced a brand new comedy video every week on my channel. And so, yeah, so I've been basically producing since then.
And for those who don't know Eric Loya.
Oh, mm-hmm. Eric Loya is the also writer. He's the co-writer for the Untitled web series.
Yes.
And also plays Boyish the Extraordinary.
Yes.
Yes.
So you guys have been collaborating together for a while now.
Yeah, we have a really great co-writing relationship, and he's obviously, now that you've seen, he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. We've been performing together too. We have a series of Mac versus PC ads spoofs that are pretty big on the channel right now. I think they're my biggest videos now.
Fantastic. So were you always a Doctor Who fan, or are you relative newcomer, or are you even a fan?
No, I am a fan. When I was a kid, my brothers, who were way older than I was, they're 10 and 12 years older. So back in the early 80s, I was watching the shows that they watched. So that includes Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers and Doctor Who on PBS. Mm-hmm. And so I remember vaguely, you know, this guy in a long scarf, you know, Tom Baker was my first Doctor. And what I loved was K-9. I loved the idea of a robot dog. But after Tom Baker's regeneration, I remember that. And then I kind of lost interest. And although I was always surrounded by friends who were Doctor Who fans, so I constantly had it in my life peripherally. And then when the relaunch happened, I didn't really watch because I missed. I couldn't, you know, I didn't have TV, so and it wasn't available, you know, easily online. So I kind of waited until I could watch it, and then I just when I auditioned for Inspector Spacetime, before I auditioned, I knew it was kind of a Matt Smith specific. I knew enough about the new Doctor that I knew that the way it was written in the script, it was describing Matt Smith, and so I watched his first episode. And then after I got cast, I went back because it had just gone up on Netflix last year. Mm-hmm. And so I started watching with Chris Eccleston and loved it. And so I really, really enjoy the new series. I've watched it twice now.
Like, so, all the way through?
Yeah, all the way through.
Do you have a least favorite episode?
Least favorite?
Least favorite. I'm just curious.
No. I tend to be more of a positive person. I tend to look at the things I like best rather than the things I like worst. There are some things that I'm not enjoying about the new, about the Stephen Moffat, like, years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, let's see. Because Stephen Moffat did the first, the second Angels episode,
yes,
which I thought kind of ruined the mythology of the Angels that, mm-hmm, they'd set up in the in Blink, and it's just that they kind of, there's so many cool, the cool thing about the Angels is that they were these kind of solitary creatures, and to get in Blink, to get four of them together,
mm-hmm,
at one, it seemed like, you know, it seemed so amazing and dangerous, right? And then in the next episode, there are hundreds of them, and they can open their eyes around each other, which seems to contradict what they had, you know?
Yeah.
I am a huge nerd, and so that kind of stuff bugs
me. No, but the fact we're just nodding along, like, yeah, this is a very good, well-reasoned point.
For me, it's like, it's the Voyager Borg problem all over again.
Right, yes, exactly. Voyager ruined the Borg by making them too easy to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, getting cast on Community. Was it just like an open, like, you went in for the audition, you got the job, or?
Well, kind of. It was an interesting thing because that particular role they didn't put down on breakdown. So normally how television is cast is a casting director will have a breakdown of all the roles that they are trying to cast, and then agents will submit their actors, and casting directors get on average 1,000 to 3,000 submissions for every role. I mean, even tiny little, like, cop roles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so as it happened, I had just met Josh Einstein, who is now a head casting director on Community. At the time he was an associate, and I'd met him at a workshop, and so he just called me in for this audition, because it was a small, like, show within a show, so they were just calling in people that he knew. And so I went in, and I read for both Inspector Spacetime and Cougarton Abbey, and yeah, and I made a point to tell him that I was much more excited about this one-line Inspector Spacetime thing than the two-scene Cougarton Abbey role. And yeah, and I got it.
Nice. So when you first did it, did you have any idea it was going to take off the way it did?
Because you sound like you were, like you said, you were excited about it, and you think, like, and everyone else will be as excited about it. Or is it, were you also caught by surprise by the passion of all the fans that picked it up and went along with it?
Nobody knew how big it was going to be. I was excited about it, partly because it stripped, you know, Abed says, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And so to me, that meant, oh, I'll probably come back in another episode, you know, have another, you know, have another clip. Because that's what they did with Kickpuncher. They did two episodes of, you know, that, or we saw two bits of Kickpuncher. So I was like, okay, well, maybe this will be a recurring role at least. But, and then when we were filming, we were talking about how Community should make an episode of Inspector Space Time or a web series or something like that, for, you know, because that could be good bonus content. And so that's why we, like, after the first day of shooting, I called Eric on the phone and I said, hey, we should write a web series just in case they don't have time to do it, and we'll just write it, and then if I'm lucky enough to be on set again, I can talk to them about, hey, here's this web series. But no, I nobody had anything that it was going to be so huge and that fans were going to engage with it so intensely. So that was really a surprise and a great one.
So you were already writing the web series before it even aired?
Yeah, we had all this. I mean, Eric and I sat down for hours figuring out all the parallels of the Inspector Spacetime universe and different things. So things like Optic Pocket Knife and Infinity Knight are our inventions that we had to come up with for the web series. But then fans did so much more. They invented that entire history of the character that first weekend after the premiere aired, after the season premiere.
Now, did you go about, like, essentially meshing the two and making the fan continuity work with your continuity?
We have adopted a lot of the things that the fans did. There are particular things that I try to engage with the fans to steer, because I was on the pro boards myself, and I was, you know, once the TV Tropes page went up, I was, you know, of course, engaged in that. So things like Darset as the name of the time machine, I tried to steer clear of, because I knew, because at the time we were, I mean, honestly, I was kind of assuming that NBC would want to do a web series. Like, I mean, especially given how big this thing was, I was a no-brainer. So what I was concerned with was I didn't want the fans to be disappointed when the Community writers couldn't use a particular element because it was too close to Doctor Who, because I knew that, you know, big companies are always concerned about being sued, and, you know, they're always concerned about copyright and intellectual property and all that. So I knew that they wouldn't use Darset because it was just too close to TARDIS. And so I was just trying to steer them in a more creative way. What's a, you know, Darset is kind of also a simple joke, right? It's just a rearranging of the letters, where let's be more creative and create an actual thing. And fans did. I mean, the fans did a lot of really amazing things, like the idea of the inspector having no hearts.
That was brilliant. I was just remarking before we called you, like, that was my favorite elements of the whole Infinity Knights thing.
And on the surface, it's just a simple allegory to Doctor Who's, you know, it's an opposite of two hearts. But what they did with that, then, they kind of yes-anded themselves and made it created a whole story around the fact that because they have no hearts, the inspector needs his associates in order to balance, in order to be his, you know, compassion, his humanity, and his heart. So we've written that into the series, and then the fact that Booth has, you know, it's not just smaller on the inside, it is always slightly too small for however people are inside, so you fit an infinite number of people, but it's always just slightly too small, which I love. That's great. And the reason is because it creates the closest friendships you've ever had.
What I'm also loving from what you just told us, I'm a coder in practice, and it's almost like this open source like content that you've done. We haven't talked about Mashup, but it's like, you know, you're developing something, these guys are developing something, and you keep pulling out and putting back things into it. So it's really exciting to hear that I mean, obviously you were a big part of that, but it wasn't anything like, oh, these guys are popular, let's go off and make a web series. Your passion was already there from the start.
Absolutely. There's one story I love is that on the Facebook page, stories that people were, you know, posting about the web series, and this one guy did a review. I think it was from I don't remember who it was. It might have been Topless Robot or but anyway, he posted this review, and the it was a good article, but there were some like editorial mistakes, like misspellings and stuff like that. So I posted it and said, hey, this is a great article, you know, maybe needed some proofreading, and in parentheses I put follow Tarvis, because he was linking my Twitter feed and put follow T-A-R-V-I-S. And follow Tarvis. And then in the comments of that post, people start talking about Tarvis as a character in Inspector Spacetime. And out this like history and how Tarvis was this robot squirrel that that used to lead the inspector around, so whenever they were lost the squirrel would show up and go follow Tarvis, and they would follow Tarvis back to safety, and that all happened like in that comment. And then someone added Tarvis to the TV tropes, and someone created a follow Tarvis Twitter, or a Tarvis the Sixth, I think it is. And so we then wrote Tarvis into season 2 of the web series. And it's amazing, like, synergy back and forth. It's like a creative, you know...
mind meld.
Well, it's a fulfillment of what the internet culture should be like, instead of just like, oh, here's your show, take it or leave it. Yo, you don't like it, it's dead. it's ongoing and you're maintaining it. And actually glad to hear you're saying that, well, obviously all that energy is going to a season 2. We can talk about that later, but let's talk about the development of season 1.
Yeah, I mean, so you were already writing it. Did what you started writing then essentially become what season 1 was?
It remained almost unchanged. The only difference, I mean, again, this is one of those things that Eric does sometimes, where I called him on, I think I shot my first episode on maybe a Friday, and I called him that night and said, hey, we need to write this web series. And then he, who is usually very good at communicating, didn't call me back or return my calls or anything for like 5 days. Getting upset, because I'm like, hey, to work on this with you. And finally I called him and I said, what is wrong, why would you ever return my calls? And he goes, oh, I've been working on these scripts. Scripts which essentially were episodes 2 through 6 of the series, and basically done. And so and they remain virtually unchanged. The only thing that happened was I wrote episode 1 to kind of be an introduction to the characters. Mm-hmm. His episode 2, or his episode 1 was episode 2, where it kind of starts out in the hallway where they're doing that close talking. Mm-hmm. And just right in the middle of action, and there was not enough to really set stuff up. So I wrote episode 1 as a way to, you know, just introduce everything. And then we go through the process and refine the scripts together and polish, and we do that. We shoot, you know, so we'll be on set looking at words and being like, well, this, you know, I mean, it's comedy, every word matters sometimes, and we'll be like, this word doesn't, this sentence doesn't jive, you know, what can we do that's better or something like that. So but yeah, that's how episode 1 or season 1 happened.
That's fantastic. What led you to the, you know, realizing you're gonna have to do it on your own, or you're going to have to create this completely unrelated web series that has nothing to do with Inspector Spacetime? What was that point?
Well, it was probably after... So season 3 finished shooting in early February of this year. So they were done shooting season three. I mean, even the second half. And I did the Christmas episode, but then they didn't have me back for any other episodes. And I'm like, okay, well, they're probably finished. And I didn't know because I hadn't seen the second half of the series. So I'm like, okay, they're probably done with Inspector Spacetime. And, or at the very least, done with me as Inspector Spacetime. And I thought, okay, well, and we've pitched the web series to as many people as we could find and gotten no response whatsoever. Like, nobody saying, yeah, we like it, but want to do more. Don't like it. You know, nothing at all. So then I was like, oh, well, why don't we just go ahead and put it to the fans? If they want it enough to fund it, then we'll know it's worth doing. And so we launched the Kickstarter campaign at, we did a reading of episode one at Gallifrey One, which the fan, you know, everybody in the room loved. So we were like, okay, people like it. So we launched the Kickstarter campaign and they fans funded it. And so we made it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Did the $25K you raised cover the entire production budget?
Almost. So here's how Kickstarter works. First off, you have Kickstarter takes 10%.
Right.
So that's, you know, brought us down to 22.5. And then you have to budget for perks and stuff. And so we budget about $1,000 for perks. That's printing out scripts and sending and postage for, you know, mailing scripts and pictures and posters and all that stuff and, you know, printing costs. Then, so that's about 21.5. And there were unexpected costs in filming, things like renting the booth, which I thought was going to be a few hundred dollars, ended up being about $2,000 that I didn't budget for. So I went over budget, and that some of that came out of my pocket by about $1,000, so not too bad, but we're pretty close. We did a pretty good job, I think, with what we had.
So where, what was the most fun part of the process?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I love being on set. Working with Carrie Karenin, who played Piper, finding her. Like, Carrie and I met at a casting workshop, like I was talking about where I met Josh. And Carrie and I, she did this monologue or this scene that was so funny. And she sat down next to me, and I immediately said, "Hey, I need to have your number," and so we just kind of talked, and then when this came up, I was like, "Oh, Carrie would be great for this," and so we auditioned her with about five other women who we knew. We only invited people to audition, and then Carrie basically was the highlight for me of filming. I mean, not the highlight. There were so many great things about filming, just to see something like this come together, and I've never really had a production of this scale. And even, I mean, even this was not big. I mean, it was big by my standards, but you know, it's not Hollywood big. It's tiny. So, but to have all that going on and everybody donated their time. Everybody volunteered for this. Everybody coming together to make something that they were passionate about was really a treat.
Was there much improv, or was it all straight from the page?
Well, there was some improv, but generally speaking, we write so specifically. I mean, we do. Eric and I will agonize over a word sometimes, and so generally speaking, there wasn't a whole lot of improv. There are moments where, like the last moment in the series where the inspector and Good Boyish and Piper run out, leaving Boyish and the evil inspector standing there. That moment was improvised because they run out, and then I think in the script the only line is, "Oh, there's no reason we can't still kill the girl, is there?" So we have this moment where they're like, I kind of love it where the evil inspector is like, they flew right out of here. And it's like it was a callback to the whole flown. But that was improvised, so it happens.
Cool.
So, answer to a very simple question.
It's a good answer, though. So you've mentioned season two a couple of times. Where does that currently stand?
Well, it's written. We have third drafts of the season. Now, what we had to do was, so we had this concept that we wanted to do, and then we fleshed. Then again, Eric took the lead scripting because I was busy editing season one, putting that together. So Eric took the lead on writing the bulk of the scripts, and then I would give notes to him about what we wanted to do, and we, you know, we refined together. And so right now we're at third drafts of season two, which have basically all the characters and all the action that we know we want. And it's at such a stage where now we can send it off to get a budget worked up on it, to kind of get an idea of how much it'll cost. And also send it to any guest stars. Now, we wrote roles for other people in this script. I mean, specifically, Karen Gillan, you know, had that video where she said she wanted to be in Inspector Spacetime, and I don't think she's ending up being in Community, but I guess I don't know that for sure. I feel like they would have announced that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wrote her a really nice guest star role if she wants it. The problem is that I tried going through her agents, because, you know, being in the industry, I can find out who someone's agents is.
Mm-hmm.
And her agents are trying to make her into a movie star. So for them, a web series means diddly squat. So we're having trouble getting her for that. So I would love for Karen to be in it. I don't know if we'll be able to pull that off. So now we're just trying to get that. And then the next step is getting a budget, which is going to be significantly bigger than the first season's budget, partly because I feel it's really important to be able to pay cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Some difficulties we had in the first season because we weren't able to pay people. Like, it was lovely having everybody donate their time, except that some of the people who were donating weren't experienced. And so we had some missed opportunities with the first season in that regard. And also, we lost like our sound guy the day before the shoot because he ended up getting a paying gig. And that really hurt us sound-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to avoid those problems. Plus, it's about twice as long as the first season, so that's going to increase our filming time. And so, yeah, we're probably looking up, you know, somewhere between 60 and 100,000 for season two, I think.
Do you think you'll go the Kickstarter route again?
I don't know. I wouldn't mind doing that. And I would, but we're also exploring, you know, sponsorships. If we can do something like that, that'd be great. I don't know. It's all up in the air right now. We're exploring all options, and we've got awards season coming up right now with the Streamy Awards nominations being announced on Monday. And you know, if we get an award nomination, that would help us a lot. If not, then, you know, that it doesn't really hurt us. It just leaves us where, you know.
Anyway. Where can fans go if they want to help the process along?
Right now, we have a couple things. Our website is theinspector.tv, and from there you can find like everything on the series. You can read bios on the cast and crew. You can see all the episodes, the behind the scenes episodes. There is a link on there to not only donate if you want, and we're giving away a free copy of the rematch theme song for people who donate $10 or more, but also there is a nomination. The Streamies do a fan nomination, so you can actually right on the main page use Twitter to nominate the series for best comedy or best action sci-fi series. Obviously, it's not an action, but it's a sci-fi series. And
there's some running around. It works.
My favorite episode, number 5, was all that. That was amazing.
Fleeing episode. I love the fleeing episode. Oh man, that was so hard to film too. But theinspector.tv is probably the best place to go and just click on everything.
Nice. Anything else going on with you and other projects?
Lots. I mean, I have about half a dozen projects in my back pocket waiting to go. We're still working on season two of Robot Ninja and Gay Guy. That's another thing that needs a budget in order to make it, you know, it needs season one. If you haven't watched it, it's a good show. It's a good sitcom. I think it's very well written and very well performed, but it doesn't look... I mean, the production value is low, and you can tell. So if we want to do season two, it's worth doing well, but that requires some money. And so we had trouble raising that money for right away, so we're trying to... You know, the idea is that shows like The Inspector will be able to get us an audience and get us views and make us more appealing to either investors or sponsors or fans who want to help us fund other projects. I've got another web series called Time Wreck, which is a time travel web series. I've got a full length feature that we've got in our back pocket waiting, you know, for an opportunity to make. And so all sorts of stuff, just looking for a chance to come out and be in the world.
That's awesome. Well, I think that's all we got for you. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
You foiled our fiendish questions, but we'll hopefully be back to follow your continued adventures in the future.
Yeah.
Very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, good luck with everything. And yeah, hopefully we will talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. And yeah, don't forget to be wary of Maya Angelou's calendar. She's predicting, I hear, the end of the world next month. So
she is a feisty one, that Maya Angelou.
I just actually want her to appear now as a character on this untitled web series.
She's an arch villain.
Yes. Maya Angelou. She should be like the Ranny or Rainy? I don't know.
It would be that would increase our episode length by like 3 times.
But there'd be so much awesome poetry. It would just be all poetry.
The Inspector and her have a poet off.
This is gold. You get this for free.
Notes right now in my mind. All right, guys. It was wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you so much again to Travis Ritchie. This has been Timey Wimey TV. You can find us on the internet at the following places. You can find us on Twitter at Timey Wimey TV. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for us on Google Plus, because Google Plus is very silly and doesn't... well, maybe it has vanity URLs at this point. Who knows? We're on Google Plus.
You have to search.
Yes. That's the fun of it. You can email us at feedback@timeywimey.tv. And of course, you can find us on the internets with loads of links and past episodes at timeywimey.tv. You should do that. You should go to our website. It's a good time.
You can grab our RSS feed from our website and subscribe with your favorite podcast listener.
Right.
And we'll try to work on making that even more easier for you in the future.
We are experiencing iTunes difficulties, friends, but as soon as we are back on iTunes, you will know it, because we will be like drinking champagne.
That's true.
And here on this podcast.
The way to imagine it, we're the rebels. It's a Death Star. We know where the exhaust port is. We're heading in there.
Yes, hopefully none of us is Briggs.
I get to be Han Solo.
Is it... No, it's Biggs, not Briggs. Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Biggs!
Liz, come on. Get your stuff together. All right. Thank you again for listening, and have a very timey-wimey time.
Bye, y'all.